your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program for you this evening. We're going to start off with Greg Reese talking about Canada. Okay, boy, they've been the lapdog for the Chinese, according to him. But here we go with Greg Reese, and then we'll get into this announcement that actually occurred July 15th, 2021, about NATO establishing a command center in Norfolk. Can you believe that? Here we go with Greg Reese.
For years now, Justin Trudeau has been a loyal lapdog to the communist Chinese. While the people of Canada ceremoniously came together to condemn the CCP's Uyghur genocide, Trudeau's cabinet sent a single member on a Zoom call to officially abstain. When the president of Taiwan was set to be honored by the Halifax International Security Forum for standing strong against China's relentless pressure, the Trudeau administration threatened to end their funding if they went through with it. Trudeau invited the Communist Chinese military to conduct winter training in Canada in 2019, less than 200 miles from the U.S. border in upstate New York. The head of the Canadian military caught wind of it from the U.S. Pentagon and called it off, which upset Trudeau, whose chief concern was offending the CCP. Under Trudeau, Canada has been a big player in the COVID hoax. In early 2017, billionaire Barry Sherman, a huge supporter of Trudeau's Liberal Party, was under investigation for shady deals with Trudeau that could have resulted in his company, Apotex, the world's largest producer of hydroxychloroquine and Canada's biggest pharmaceutical company, being banned for 5 years from lobbying the government. Later that year, Sherman and his wife were found hung from railings around their indoor swimming pool, with markings from being beaten and tied by their wrists. It was officially ruled a suicide, and along with Sherman, the probe died. Apotex was able to continue doing business with Trudeau's government, and went on to provide dangerous drugs as part of their ventilator protocol. And it was at the University of British Columbia, where the lipid nanoparticles that make the mRNA shots possible were developed. Trudeau is a natural-born tyrant. After less than 30,000 deaths, 0.07% of the population, Justin Trudeau has announced that all federal employees and everyone 12 or older traveling on planes, trains, and cruise ships need to be fully vaccinated. Testing negative will no longer be an option.
Testing will no longer be an option. These travel measures, along with mandatory vaccination for federal employees, are some of the strongest in the world. Because when it comes to keeping you and your family safe, when it comes to avoiding lockdowns for everyone, this is no time for half measures.
In Ontario, elected Representative Rick Nichols refused.
But under no circumstances will I, nor should any Ontarian, be forced or coerced to do something against their will.
And was fired. Under new health orders in Saskatchewan, the government may now enter into any building on any land without a warrant and seize property. And they are building isolation centers. Trudeau's government, like most governments in the West, is dragging their people into a hellish reality of forced experimental drugs and a social credit score to police every movement they make for the rest of their lives. The same reality coming to you and your family, so long as humanity does nothing to stop it. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
Maybe this open border to the South is part of the North American Union idea. I think George W. first agreed, made an agreement about the North American Union back in Waco years ago when he was president. But it seems to me that this is opening up the border to dissolve the southern border with Mexico. And this could be part of the plan to dissolve our southern border and open us up to a North American Union type of mechanism. But anyway, what we've got next is an announcement that was made July 15th about a NATO command center in Norfolk, Virginia. And here we go. At the end of this hour, we may play some of that ceremony if we have time. But right now, this is just a short announcement from a local affiliate. Here we go next with the Norfolk NATO Command Center.
It's been called the first change in NATO strategy in more than 50 years. Today, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization reached full operational capacity for a new organization called Joint Force Command Norfolk. Mike Gooding has details.
NATO is built on the cornerstone principle of collective defense, that an attack against any one ally is considered an attack against all allies. NATO's Joint Force Command Norfolk is being established as the 30-nation alliance's only operational command in North America in response to the rising Russian threat following the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War.
No one nation can face today's challenges alone. Standing up JFC Norfolk demonstrates the dedication of both sides of the Atlantic to the security and stability of the Euro-Atlantic area.
The command's mission, to increase security in the North Atlantic from the Caribbean to the Arctic. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff offered a stern warning.
NATO is still the most powerful alliance in the world, and the United States is still the most powerful and capable military in the world. The challenge to us is we have to keep it that way. We have to maintain the readiness of the present, and we have to modernize for the future. We are ready right now. Those who think we are not are mistaken. And any adversary that seeks to challenge the United States military resolve will do well to respect this military and our alliance in NATO.
Mike Gooding, 13 News Now.
NATO is believed to have 3.5 million troops and civilian personnel. NATO invoked the Collective Defense Article 5 provision for the first time in its history after the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the United States.
It sort of seemed like they're preparing, instead of a U.N. army, this was a fear that many of us had for years. Instead of a U.N. army being used against, say, the U.S., perhaps it's going to be this NATO angle, see? And, you know, this command center is, I think, a very dangerous thing to establish on our soil. I just don't see it. It's the first change of strategy in 50 years of NATO's strategy. And I think that signals a big, big change for us, but not for the good. I just don't see having NATO Command Center in Norfolk as something that we needed to do. And General Milley was at this ceremony on July 15th, right before the Kabul debacle. And, you know, he went, you know, they marched in with two flags on this. One flag was the United States flag, and the other one was a NATO flag. They played our national anthem. And then they played the anthem, the NATO anthem. And that's something else, too. The flags were at the same height. There were all kinds of dignitaries, and mostly military from the 30 nations that make up NATO. And they said this is the most powerful union ever, you know, assembled in the world's history. But is that most powerful, you could say, you know, military group going to be used against America? Well, this is something that I really fear, and I'm not pulling punches on this. And, gosh, I'm just very fearful about this whole thing. Well, what's coming up next is a report by Laura Ingram earlier this week about Portland. Portland last week had rioting in the downtown area, and there was reported about $500,000 worth of damage. And there's a gentleman that she interviewed, a brother-in-law of a man that was shot in the back in Portland recently. And he's getting disgusted with the investigation of his brother-in-law up there. So anyway, she's going to report on that, and then we'll get into some other issues. Dr. McCullough recently appeared on a talk show, I think it was last night, and he's reporting that this spike protein can hang around in the body for up to 15 months or longer. And he said, when this spike protein reacts to the vaccine shots and all that, and it's created and staying in the body that long, it becomes highly, highly dangerous and pathogenic to the body. So that's something to keep our eye on. And just these vaccines are just have been dangerous to many people and killed many people. But anyway, we're going to play next this interview that Laura Ingram had about the Portland violence just recently in Portland, Oregon. Here we go with Laura Ingram.
Now, not long ago, Portland, Oregon was hailed as the model city, proof that radical progressives could create a wealthy urban utopia, albeit with a hippie granola sort of vibe to it. Lefty Comics even created an entire TV show called Portlandia, remember that? That was showered with accolades for its depiction of Portland as a quirky, fun little city run by friendly vegans and environmentalists. And remember all those Keep Portland Weird signs and T-shirts? Well, maybe they should focus on keeping Portland safe instead.
According to Portland police, they responded to 110 shootings just last month. That's about 4 shootings a day. Even more alarming is almost 85% of shootings this year have been in North and East Portland. City and county leaders are still scrambling to slow the gun violence, but so far, community members have not seen any results.
I don't know, you know, exactly what the answer is, but I know that one thing is it's harder now when you call the police, it takes longer to get here.
The city has now passed a grim milestone, a record 67 homicides this year, which follows last year's 83% spike in homicides. Now, Portland now has more murders than bigger Western cities like San Fran and Seattle. And we must never forget that this violence did not occur in a vacuum. It took root after Oregon Democrats made it clear that it considered President Trump a bigger threat to Portland than the radicals who were occupying entire city blocks and setting fires.
Their forces are not needed here. They are not wanted here. And they're making a challenging situation worse.
The protests in Portland have been overwhelmingly peaceful. Crime in Portland and across Oregon was down before Donald Trump sent in his secret police.
These guys came in like a bulldozer. It's a disaster the administration's own making.
Oh, please. Democrats are the ones who created the disaster, and it is a deadly one. Now, who knows how many lives were lost and damage was done after they cut $27 million from the police budget just last year. And earlier this year, the state passed what is, in effect, pro-rioter legislation, banning police from using force against them and charging violators with only second-degree official misconduct. Now, meanwhile, Portland liberals were coddling and encouraging the Marxist revolutionaries who were attacking police officers and putting the city to the torch.
There is violence and there is destruction. What's your message to the people on the streets tonight?
My message is you've been heard. Thank you for calling out the administration for what it's doing. It's unconstitutional. It's an affront to democracy.
Now, this only, of course, demoralized the police. Since August 2020, nearly 200 Portland police officers have left the force. Now, the police are so undermanned, they can't even enforce routine traffic violations, and they certainly don't have the numbers to keep rampant homelessness in check. But have no fear, because Oregon Governor Kate Brown and friends are focused on thwarting the real threat, right-wing violence. In August, they wrote, "The threatened use of violence against people and the destruction of property to further bigoted political or social objectives undermines our growing commitment to a truly inclusive community. We're committed to working together to keep our community safe and counter dangerous efforts to undermine democracy." But when Antifa committed $500,000 in damage last week in the city's downtown area, did any of those democracy protectors condemn it? Of course not. They don't care, because they'll say anything to maintain power and control, no matter how devastating to their constituents.
Emre Taskin and his wife Yashim are living in a nearly constant state of anxiety. Their business has been vandalized or broken into, the windows shattered, four times so far during the pandemic.
In total, since March 2020, we spent almost $20,000 for all this. People who are doing this, they feel really comfortable while doing that. They feel like nothing's gonna happen, no response will come as quick.
Now, this is all kind of the sad, final, predictable act of everything liberal Democrats touch. From Detroit to Oakland, now Portland, this reign of terror always ends with lawlessness, an exodus, and, of course, death. And that's the angle. All right, joining us now is Don Osborne, the brother-in-law of Jacob Vasquez, who was shot and killed in Northwest Portland last month. Don, first of all, we are so extremely sorry for your family's loss. I know it is horrific for all of you. You heard Jacob was gunned down in a supposedly safe part of the city. Obviously, other than being devastated, what was going through your mind?
Thank you for having me on, first of all. But the thing that went through our mind is, how could this happen? How could Jacob, such full of life, how could he initially be taken like that and shot for no reason? And how come it happened? Why? Why did it happen?
Don, are you surprised that there are individuals still in public office who maintain that cutting police funding, ultimately shrinking the force through demoralization, demonization, et cetera, that was the okay thing to do? That was, in fact, the right and moral thing to do. Does that shock you?
I think that it was one. It absolutely shocks me. To actually believe, to think that you're going to cut law enforcement by almost 200 officers and to run them out of town and to think that I was going to have a positive effect on the community is absolutely ludicrous, and I believe that was one of the direct causes of my brother-in-law being murdered.
And the killer has not been caught. Have you gotten any other updates from law enforcement?
No, since we first talked, we have not received any more updates. I believe our hands are tied. Law enforcement's running so thin, and all of this is coming back on the innocent. And the criminals are running free.
Did it surprise you that you had the downtown area just rampage through, smashing windows, $500,000 worth of damage, and basically, I guess, because, again, they're undermanned, the police, they just let it happen last week? I mean, how do businesses survive this, let alone all the murders that have taken place just over the last 2 years?
I don't know how they're going to make it. Officers are so – even if there are officers able to show up, they can't do anything. I have a message for Antifa, whoever it is. Where were you rioting? Where were you there to protest when my brother was shot in the back? Where were you?
Well, any local officials reach out to you about – your family's loss or the state of again, an ongoing investigation? I mean, an individual shot in the back, did an innocent person just gunned down on the street, and you hear a lot of moralizing by a lot of the people we just quoted in my angle. Any word?
We haven't heard anything from the city officials. Very disappointing. I just think that we could sit down and talk and try to find out some common sense solutions to how do we curtail this from any more further Jacobs being shot. The innocent, the criminals are being protected right now, and the innocent are there to fend for themselves. And it's a travesty what's happening in Portland. And it's a travesty what happened to my brother-in-law.
Do you expect the city ultimately to begin to see another exodus of residents if we don't see a change?
I don't see any other results than that. I mean, up in Nob Hill where the shooting happened to my brother-in-law, that was such a – they never had anything like that happen there, and it's spreading throughout the city. You know, it's a beautiful city, but it's being run down day after day. I'm not from Portland. When I was up there, I was like, well, you could tell this is a beautiful city, but you could tell that it's being destroyed. And I don't know what else the residents are gonna have any other options but to leave.
Well, you got to vote the bums out. That's what they got to do. Don, please extend our condolences to your entire family, and I certainly hope the killer is apprehended and prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Don, thank you, and stay in touch with us, please.
A man that just lost his brother-in-law. But here's a quick report by Greg Reese on some of the statistics about the vaccine shots and deaths and so forth. But here we go with Greg Reese. We're going to follow that by Stu Peters interview with Jane Ruby and what she had to say about the FDA and so forth and so on. I mean, it's just a terrible set of circumstances. Here we go with Greg Reese with a brief report on statistics here of the vaccine and the virus and so forth.
Having the data from millions of cases over several weeks, nearly a third of all COVID cases in the UK, the data is clear. The so-called COVID vaccines are slowly killing people. The latest vaccine surveillance reports published by Public Health England show what we've already been hearing from doctors worldwide. The mRNA jabs are destroying people's immune systems. And it seems to be happening gradually over time, especially for the doubly vaccinated between 40 and 70 years old. They have already lost over 40% of their immune system capability and are losing an additional 5% every week. At this rate, by Christmas, we will have 0% immune system capability in all doubly vaccinated people over 40. And by March, everyone over 30 will have lost their immune systems as well. Over time, it appears that those aged 30 and younger are also seeing a degradation of their immune systems. It's normal for this age group to have a more vigorous immune system, so perhaps it does a better job fighting off the debilitating mRNA jabs at first. Time will tell, but the data shows a very difficult and dark winter lies ahead. And we've heard this before. Dr. Ryan Cole, a pathologist who has conducted over 100,000 COVID-19 lab tests, has also found that the mRNA shots are causing serious autoimmune disorders. And Dr. David Bauer, one of the top virologists running this so-called vaccine program in the UK, confirms all of this.
We found that recipients of the Pfizer vaccine, those who've had two doses, have about 5 to 6-fold lower amounts of neutralizing antibodies, which block the virus from getting into your cells in the first place. We've also found that for people with only one dose of the Pfizer jab, that they are less likely to have high levels of these antibodies in their blood. And perhaps most importantly for all of us going forward is that we see that the older you are, the lower your levels are likely to be, and the time since you've had your second jab, as that time goes on, the lower your levels are also likely to be.
And actually says that having a regular booster shot will be some kind of remedy.
So that's telling us that we're probably going to be needing to prioritize boosters for older and more vulnerable people.
Like a monthly subscription service to stay alive. Let us not forget how all of this was started by the communist Chinese. How they already recovered from COVID and are now flaunting military power, threatening the borders of Taiwan and India. In the book Unrestricted Warfare, published in America 20 years ago, officers of the communist Chinese military recognize that it's impossible to challenge the U.S. in a conventional military arena and explain how the only way to conquer America would be through deception, so that the public never knew they were under attack. They described how they could accomplish this by flooding the U.S. with illicit drugs to demoralize us, infiltrating and subverting the stock markets, the judicial system, and the media, seizing control of vital natural resources, and creating a fake natural disaster using biological weapons. And finally, take down the entire electrical information grid to cause social panic, street riots, and a political crisis. With over a third of the population suffering from complete immune failure, taking down the grid this winter would be devastating. Now is the time to brace yourself for what's coming. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
Next, Jane Ruby on Stu Peters' show, The Last Hour on Alex Jones, has this to say about what's really going on with the FDA and so forth, and about what the straight and skinny is. Here we go with her interview with Stu Peters.
Always one of my favorites. StuPeters.tv is where I reside. If you'd come and find me, I would appreciate it. Check it out. See what you think. You know, for 200 years, America has been like this beacon of freedom for the entire world. Our Declaration of Independence is one of the most important documents ever written. Our Constitution is by far the most successful of any country. And now Owen Schroyer is talking about somebody being in jail for 9 months for a Facebook post. Nick Fuentes, he's 23 years old, banned in real life from Airbnb, kicked off YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Twitter, PayPal, Venmo, Patreon, Shopify, Stripe, Streamlabs, Coinbase, Reddit. These bans are so aggressive. And all for free, it's just free speech. You're not allowed to question the regime. And the people that I fear for the most here are parents of children in homes where there is a disagreement about the safety and the efficacy or the conspiracies surrounding these shots that have been so completely polarized and rammed down the throat of Americans and a global community ad nauseum. Lockstep participation by world leaders. It's really hard to believe that millions of people potentially could be in on this. So there are times where I'm like, am I just freaking crazy? Like, seriously, have I lost my mind? I look in the mirror like, seriously, have I lost my mind? But then you look at the facts and the statistics. You look at all of these people that truly are dying. We talk and we see emails from people who have had personal experiences. I talked to a military barber. You can find it at StuPeters.tv. She lives right off a military base. That's where she cuts hair. Over a dozen, personally known to her, military-aged healthy people who continuously go through physical fitness tests and examinations, both physical and psychological, dead. The only common denominator is this shot. There are so many dangers associated with this thing that they are now going to be pushing into 5 to 11-year-old kids. And before the break, I mentioned that police will be showing up at my door if I'm hesitant or resistant or refuse outright this injection for my kids because of what I know to be true. And if 340 million people in this country knew what we knew to be true, obviously, things would be a whole lot different in this country, but it's because of that Nick Fuentes-type banning. It's because of the InfoWars, Alex Jones, Owen Schroyer-type banning, and me. I'm subject to it as well. Kicked off Twitter, kicked off YouTube. It's because of this. That is how dangerous that is. Which is why I really wish President Trump would have taken that a whole lot more seriously before he left, too. But we have to sit and listen to him talk about infrastructure and the same rallies over and over again, but he's getting booed. He's getting booed when he talks about these shots. We're watching on Saturdays as hundreds of thousands of people erupt at college football stadiums around the country opposing this installed regime. People are waking up, so we have to continue doing this. That is why I remain a general in this information war and will continue to do it. That's why I know that everybody else on this particular network will continue to do it. And Dr. Jane Ruby joins us now, who, by the way, was supposed to have been enjoying these years, retired, feet kicked up on the beach in Florida. You made it to Florida. You got the beach in your backyard, but the feet aren't kicked up and you're still working harder than ever. I bet you never imagined that you would be a foot soldier in this war. And yet here you are. You've been a mainstay on the Stu Peters Show. Super responsible reporting, unrelenting research, and bravery. I mean, you were the first, I believe, in the United States to bring graphene oxide to the public attention. It's now widely known, and that's the least of our concerns inside of these injections. We are now learning as more and more microscopy experts come forward, and the things that we're seeing under the glass, Dr. Kiri Madej is bringing us, Dr. Zandre Batha. I mean, brave people speaking out saying, hey, this isn't right, and they're banned, and they're shut up, and they're shut down, and they're called crazy and kooky conspiracy theorists, and now they're going to jab our kids. I want to know your real thoughts on what you think is going to happen. Am I outside of the line? Am I overstating or being hyperbolic when I say all you have to do is look at a bunch of dead babies with pulmonary hemorrhage? All you have to do is look at 12 to 17-year-old boys who are, you know, kicking off, keeling off, and experiencing serious heart conditions. I mean, it makes sense that that would be consistent in the 5 to 11 age group. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% right, Stu. And like I said before the break, there's a lot more devastation and death to come, and it's going to be greater and in larger numbers because children react more robustly. Look, I want to go back on the record. This is not a vaccine. Everybody, stop calling it that. Like Dr. David Martin says, if you call it a vaccine, you've already lost the argument. So let's start there. And secondly, things are getting very dangerous. People are going, you know, to their local drugstore to get a seasonal flu shot. Well, guess what? They're getting hit with COVID-19 injections from any of these companies, and they're told later on things are dangerous. I have called for across my friends, my family, and the general public for a 100% moratorium right now on all vaccines. I don't want to hear this thing. Oh, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but well, you know what? There's no reason to trust these companies right now. They've lost the privilege of our faith and trust, and we have to suspend right now until we get to the bottom of this. And you're right. Scientists like that have done a great job since these companies are not having press conferences. They're not disclosing. They're withholding information actively. All we can do is put together the world scientists to start doing what they're doing. They're analyzing these vials. They're chemically analyzing them. They're looking at the blood of people who have been injected. And a lot of people who have not been injected, Stu, are also coming up with blood damage. And I have a suspicion it's because this mRNA technology and a lot of these poisons this didn't start like this year. It probably was being used and infiltrated into the seasonal flu and other seasonal injections. But that's just my speculation right now. Look, for the kids, I want to do a shout out to President Trump. I agree with Dr. Alexander. You've got to come out against this now. I don't care how many bad advisors you've got around you. You'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to see what's happening, and it's about to happen to our children. And it's getting serious. And I'm going to tell you something else, Stu. They didn't do their due diligence. The FDA did not require the companies to do their due diligence on drug-drug interactions, but I'll tell you what they are allowing the company to do. There's a study on clinicaltrials.gov. It's 0486363. I'm going to tell you, this study, I just realized today, is sponsored. That means it's paid for by the China National Biotech Group, and it's going to test the COVID-19 vaccine, whatever that is, in 3 to 17-year-olds in the United States. It started on April 28th of this year, and guess what? It went until May of this year. I mean, that's not even a one-month study. So the shenanigans that are going on are just unbelievable. The FDA has collapsed. You have to all take a step back until we can get to the bottom of this and spare these children. This is getting incredibly dangerous. And you're not safe if you go for a regular seasonal shot. You don't even know what you're getting.
Yeah, especially when they're being given out at your kid's school. I mean, by the janitor or by the lunch aide or whoever it is that's giving these shots. Dr. Jane Ruby, thank you so much for being
here. Yeah, and the testing, the swabs, very dangerous right now. Agreeing to the swabs in place of the jab is still surrender, and you're still at risk for getting inoculated with God knows whatever, viruses, parasites, all kinds of things. And that evidence is has been out there for some time.
Nick did a good report Tucker had about this gender changing in our schools. And I think Tom Cotton is trying to introduce some kind of a law that would prohibit these schools from doing what they damn please. I mean, without notifying the parents. The parents should always be notified about anything like this. But anyway, this is an excellent interview about this gender problem in our schools.
The reality of biological sex is at the center of human civilization. It's at the center of the joy in most people's lives, I would argue, certainly mine. So if we allow this to be erased, I mean, everything changes forever. You wonder why there hasn't been more organized, sincere, vigorous opposition to these changes.
Well, I believe we're going to see that very soon. I've been in touch since March when I testified against the Equality Act with Senator Tom Cotton's office. And I believe he will sponsor legislation very soon to stop schools from going behind parents' backs and giving their kids new gender identities and new names and then conspiring to keep this from parents.
It's beyond belief that that's happening. So you think it's reversal at some point? You think that enough people of all sides and maybe even sexual orientations, people who believe in biology, can win? Or are we too far gone?
Well, we need to focus on the right battles to fight. And I believe there are essentially four. We have to fight gender ideology in the schools. We got to get it out, all this mumbo jumbo out of the schools. We have to fight for girls' sports and women's protective spaces. We have to stop schools from undermining parents and giving kids gender identities that the parents don't know about. And we have to reform pediatric gender medicine. No more teenage girls with mental health problems walking into Planned Parenthood and walking out that day with a course of testosterone. No more lying to the public about the harms of puberty blockers.
Man, I hope you're leading this effort. We already are, and doing such a great job. Abigail Schreiber, always happy to have you on. Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to provide our condolences for Colin Powell and his family for their recent loss. But as I was looking back over in some of my files and so forth, I did come up with something very interesting. There was an interview before Biden was elected with Colin Powell, and he laid out some things of why he did not support Trump but would go and vote for Biden instead. So his vote did bring about the election of Biden. But what he was doing was he was stating some things that were just categorically wrong, in my opinion. And he never said a word about the surveillance that the Democrats, with a steel, report and all that dirty stuff that they pulled against Trump. He never stood up for that. So even though I'm giving my condolences for him, I'm telling it like it is about Colin Powell. And Colin Powell was not on our side. His thinking was wrong. His conclusions were wrong. And his judgment was absolutely wrong, in my opinion. And here's what he had to say about why he would not support Trump but would vote for Biden. Here we go next.
Joining me now in a State of the Union exclusive, former Secretary of State and former Joint Chiefs Chairman, General Colin Powell. General, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Let's start right now with the extraordinary comments this week from several top former military officials, including former Secretary and General Jim Mattis, condemning President Trump's actions against protesters, his desire to have 10,000 active U.S. military in the streets of this nation. The president's former chief of staff, General Kelly, said he agreed with Mattis. Retired General John Allen says the president's threat to deploy U.S. military against American citizens, quote, may well signal the beginning of the end of the American experiment. Take a listen to what Allen told me Thursday.
I never believed that the Constitution was under threat until recently. And I have concerns about that. We should all be very attentive right now to how the rule of law is being administered in this country.
What's your response to what's been going on the last week, General?
Well, first, thanks very much, Jake. I'm very happy with what General Allen said and all the other generals, admirals are saying, and diplomats are saying. We have a constitution, and we have to follow that constitution, and the president has drifted away from it. I'm so proud of what these generals and admirals have done and others have done. But, you know, I didn't write a letter because I made my point with respect to Trump's performance some 4 years ago when he was running for office. And when I heard some of the things he was saying, it made it clear that I could not possibly vote for this individual. The first thing that troubled me is the whole birthers movement. And birthers movement had it to do with the fact that the President of the United States, President Obama, was a black man. That was part of it. And then I was deeply troubled by the way in which he was going around insulting everybody, insulting Gold Star mothers, insulting John McCain, insulting immigrants, and I'm the son of immigrants, insulting anybody who dared to speak against him. And that is dangerous for our democracy. It's dangerous for our country. And I think what we're seeing now, the most massive protest movement I have ever seen in my life, I think this suggests that the country is getting wise to this, and we're not going to put up with it anymore.
And former Defense Secretary General Mattis said, quote, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people, does not even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. It sounds like you agree with that.
You have to agree with it. I mean, look at what he has done to divide us. Forget immigrants. Let's put up a fence in Mexico. Forget this. Let's do this. He is insulting us throughout the world. He is being offensive to our allies. He is not taking into account what our foreign policy is and how it's being affected by his actions. So, yes, I agree with General Allen. I agree with all of my former colleagues. And remember, I've been out of the military now for 25 years. And so I'm watching them closely because they all were junior officers when I left. And I'm proud of what they're doing. I'm proud that they were willing to take the risk of speaking honesty and speaking truth to those who are not speaking truth.
We've seen tens of thousands of protesters taking to the streets this week in opposition to racial injustice and police brutality. What's been your personal reaction to this moment? Do you think that the country is in something of a turning point?
We are at turning points. I mean, the Republican Party, the president, thought they were sort of immune. They can go say anything they wanted. And even more troubling, the Congress would just sit there and not in any way resist what the president's doing. And the one word I have to use with respect to what he's been doing for the last several years is a word I would never have used before. I never would have used with any of the four presidents I've worked for. He lies. He lies about things. And he gets away with it because people will not hold him accountable. And so while we're watching him, we need to watch our Congress. I watched the senators heading into the chamber the other day after all this broke, with a reporter saying, what do you have to say? What do you have to say? They had nothing to say. They would not react. And so we're not a country of just a president. We have a Congress. We have a Supreme Court. But most of all, we have the people of the United States, the ones who vote, the ones who vote him in and the ones who vote him out. I couldn't vote for him in 96, and I certainly cannot in any way support President Trump this year.
So, I know you didn't vote for him in 2016. I assume, based on the fact that you approved Joe Biden when then-Senator Obama picked him to be his running mate in 2008, I assume you're going to be voting for Joe Biden?
I'm very close to Joe Biden on a social matter and on a political matter. I've worked with him for 35, 40 years, and he is now the candidate, and I will be voting for him.
What's happening in this country now is the absolute people are absolutely standing up and saying that so-and-so violated the Constitution, and those are the very people that have been violating and have been colluding together as part of the deep state to do away with Trump. And let me tell you why they all got rid of him. He made NATO start paying their share. He made the Chinese come in, and all these top-level people had secret deals with the Chinese. The Chinese had bought them hook, line, and sinker, and they had prostituted themselves to the Chinese. And all these people were indebted to the Chinese. The Bidens were in there with money received from these Chinese interests. And so forth. And all of these senators from the Bay Area, they were involved with the Chinese in one way or another. So we have these people standing up and saying, oh, so-and-so is in violation of the Constitution. They are the ones that are in violation of the Constitution. Hillsdale College in Michigan is one of the foremost colleges in the country. And they teach their students from the very beginning, from their freshman year forward, about the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. And they teach it like it should be. We created, when we went against the British, we were going against the crown. We created, our forefathers, our founding fathers, created a country where later on the slavery issue could be righted and undone and established civil rights for those people. And the South was forced by LBJ to vote the civil rights in. And Martin Luther King valiantly struggled for his people. So eventually, under our Constitution and Bill of Rights, the Civil Rights Bill was passed, and there was some retribution there for the blacks. Now, when we're talking about from here forward, this system is the best system, but it's been destroyed, and it's been destroyed coming out of the Fabian Society. And before that, the Peterloo Massacre, where the Crown went in and massacred people in Peterloo Square there in Manchester. And that great poem was written, "We are many and they are few." Well, we are many and they are few, but they have that few organized to get, that few has organized scientifically against us. They, from the Peterloo Massacre forward, the Crown has devised a scientific dictatorship, and they've got the World Economic Forum in their pocket. They are the Bilderberg Group. They are the Council on Foreign Relations. And all of the different institutions, the Aspen Institute, sister or brother is the Tavistock in England. I sat down one year, 2006, and talked with Lynn Swan, who was director of the Tavistock at that time. I was over in London. And I went out there right outside the city of London. And I looked at that hole. I checked into the library there and got a library card. And I started reading in that library in London. And I looked up books and so forth that I could never find here. And some of the things that the conspiratorial people write about, they're not there in that I could find in that library. So you've got in this conspiratorial area, if you read that, if you listen to that, you better check stuff out for your own self. Now, what we're up against, we're up against the dissolving of the southern border. We're up against the North American Union. We're up against the NATO command center at Norfolk right now. And we're up against a treacherous, you could say, deep state. They're funding through the Tides Center and the Tides Foundation millions of dollars to radical leftist groups to bring about communism for this country. John Dewey, the father of American education, was a Trotskyite. He defended Trotsky when he was, convicted in absentia in Moscow with other so-called traitors. So John Dewey, the father of American education, was the Trotskyite, folks. And they've been bringing about communism for our school system ever since. The communist movement actually started in about 1760 in Paris. And Rousseau was the instigator originally of many of the ideas, you could say, that germinated many of those writers in those 1760 period in Paris. And what you had was you had a printing shop there that started printing up pamphlets and so forth and started distributing these very widely throughout Paris and throughout France. And some of the first words were not even the word communist. It came later. Some of the very first terms were communitarian or communal type of living and the sharing of food and shelter, means of sheltering people and things like this. Then later on, this would give rise to where Marx and Engels came along. They didn't come along until about 1848, in that when there was revolutions fomented by some of their writings. But before that, you had the French Revolution, and these people got quite a thrust. You could say the communist movement got quite a thrust by then. Lenin was reading some of these earlier French writers' words on communitarian, and what was the that was the earlier term for communism. And then Marx would come along with Engels, and they would write the Communist Manifesto, and that gave rise to groups not only in France but in the UK, and that would build up until the Fabian Society latched hold of it in about 1880, in the 1880s. And the Fabian Society was a means by which to bring socialism, communism to UK, but on a very, very gradual basis. And so Bertrand Russell and those kinds of people were some of the founders of the Fabian Society itself, and Annie Besant. Some of these people that would come out of Blavatsky, Madame Blavatsky's theosophy, you could say, movement and so forth, they were some of the first people there. Later on, the Fabian Society would establish the Labour Party, and then they in turn would establish the London School of Economics and Political Science in London itself. So the Crown itself always pursued a policy of creating a controlled left that they funded and that they controlled. And that's actually what the Fabian Society was in England the whole time. Then later on, they set up, like I said, the Labour Party. So the funding had been behind them. And then, and also the Tories. So they controlled both parties. And then you have a tremendous mind control system here that was founded upon money power. And the money power resides predominantly and still in the city of London. And there you find a tremendous money power of internationalist, globalist, I guess is what you would say. But they've always been in search of and in support of bringing about world communism. But what has evolved is their corporations have become, starting with the money corporations, the banks and insurance companies, they've become so powerful that they started buying up and owning most of the industrial, you could say, resources in the world. And so they have become like monopolies, and now they've gotten hold of some of these social networks, and they're actually controlling through mindwash, and now they're actually censoring away their opposition. So if you're alternative press, especially in this country or in UK or whatever, you're going to be censored and kicked out of some of their big platforms. And this has already started occurring. And just like we had this January 6th thing, we have people on the ground now that have been outed as being agent provocateurs, you know, challenging the crowd, let's go inside, let's go inside. So you had an operation underway on January 6th that appeared to be, and a lot of this evidence has already come out, but they went out and grabbed hold of people that were invited in, and the doors were open. They're not releasing some of the video that they should release to show how open, what an open door policy at the Capitol building that the authorities finally assumed. And that's hard to prosecute people. Now, the Attorney General just testified recently, okay, Merrick Garland, and a question was posed to him. And the question was, Attorney General Garland, has the Department of Justice charged anyone with insurrection concerning January 6th? And his reply was, no, there is no one that has been, you know, charged with insurrection. But the Democrats are using that word so loosely, and it's a hot button for the press, especially because the Democrats and the media are all in one now. So they own the press. So the press is using insurrection. The Democrats are using insurrection. But Department of Justice has not charged anyone, according to the Attorney General of the United States. And he said that just recently, a couple of days ago, that no charges of insurrection had been filed against any of those people that were there. But they're being confined and mistreated, according to some sources out there. And they wouldn't even let some of the representatives go in and tour the prison that they're being held at, because it's leaking out now through attorneys and so forth that those people are being mistreated in those cells and so forth, actually mistreated in very, very big ways. So what we need to do is we need to stand up and demand that those people be let out on bail or whatever immediately, and we need to downgrade any charges to trespassing or something that is not felonious, but something on a misdemeanor basis. But with that said, I don't know if that's going to occur, because this machine out there, the deep state, you could say, is a machine, okay? And it is, they're screaming about the Constitution, and they are the ones that are violating the Constitution on a large scale. And that's what I see right now, is that the very people that are screaming the loudest about, say, the Republicans or any of these conservative groups, or you could say any groups on the right, the alternative press or anything else like that, they're being accused of violating the Constitution. Actually, they're standing up for it. And in those cities and those states where the Democrats have had sway and control and management, it has just been a terrible mess as far as people, you know, old businesses have been burned down, destroyed. There's all kinds of theft going on, and shoplifting, just unrestricted shoplifting. So we must start speaking up. These school systems recently, where these boards of education, the school boards of education, are getting criticized by some of the parents. And I encourage all the parents to go in there and take care of your children and speak up about your children, because who else is going to do it, you know? And this Department of Justice now is coming off of that. They said that they don't believe that anyone that protested to any of these school boards violated any kind of law, you know. So that's what Garland said the other day during his testimony. But we've got to hold their feet to the fire and make them come across and deliver on what, you know, what they're saying, and make them back it up, you know, because it's just unfortunate what's happening in this country today. And it's just mind-boggling and very, very frustrating for me to see, you know, the debacle, the fall, you could say, of this country occur like it has. And I want to thank each and every one of you for listening tonight. God bless you and keep you. Good night.